Good evening and welcome to another episode of the Logistic Podcast. With me there is Andreas again. Good evening, Andreas.
Hi, Tobias.
So, as we stumbled around the last podcast when we are trying to do an episode in English starting with German, we are starting today in clear English. And as there is an expert on our episode today, we are talking English and we are very happy to welcome to our today's podcast episode, Tom Anderson. Good evening, Tom.
Good evening to you. Thanks for having me.
Tom, we are talking about the topic of freemium market research for supply chain logistics, something you're an expert in. You want to tell us something about in today's episode. I'm very happy you are here and I'm very excited about what you're talking. But first of all, would you please introduce yourself to the audience?
Sure. I can introduce myself and I can also tell you a bit about the background to this idea or what we're doing. So my background is quite diverse. I've done many, many things. Most recently, I worked in mergers and acquisitions research, so helping venture capital and private equity investors to evaluate target opportunities. In 2018, I thought I could do that much better myself, so I set up Stick Limited with the view of helping VCs and private equity houses to promote that business. I started writing a few free market research reports to showcase this is how we would go about a typical project, how we would do the methodology and so on as well. Some of the companies that we wrote about on G2P solutions, happily, by coincidence perhaps, but a really good topic. Some of the companies reached out and said, we want to have this downloadable from our website. I told them, you know, give me this amount of money and you can do essentially what you want with it because it's our marketing collateral. They paid really quickly and that sparked the idea that perhaps there is a business model here to write free market research reports that are essentially advertised, but we remain unbiased, which is a really, really important point here. Yeah. So, but yeah, that's the long and short of it. We have focused primarily on supply chain, robotics, warehouse automation. That's really our wheelhouse right now. Anyway, we're trying to get a bit out of that, but that's where we are.
So that means you offer transparency, you offer the service of doing research for our field, logistics, supply chains, transports, software linked to that. And so it's the advantage for the reader that not everybody has to do its own research or its own market screening, what's quite difficult if you do it on a global scale, and you do that, as I understood it. So how would you see yourself compared to other consulting firms that set up special projects to find the right solutions?
No, I think if we look at it perhaps in two different ways. So first of all, how we view ourselves. So we see we produce really high quality content. I mean, we interview loads of people across the globe to understand very, very specific sectors or niches, you might call them as well. But for example, the WMS sector, warehouse management software, we interview across the globe companies to see what's happening in various different parts of the globe, you know, like in Asia, Europe and North America, what the different dynamics and so on as well are. So doing that, we, you know, when we talk to 50 people, we do this for perhaps 10, 12, 14 different reports every year. Then we start learning about these sectors. We become more or less global experts on these sectors. So when we go back to how we compare ourselves to consultancies and so on as well, I think we see ourselves as very, very specific, very specialist in our little niches that we target. When I say little niches, I mean, these are billion-dollar markets, yeah? So it's not kind of really tiny, but it's still kind of a niche in the whole scheme of things. But we work also, so we get asked continuously by various different top name, top two, top three, top four kind of consulting firms to help them to understand the sectors as well, especially some of the more convoluted sectors in this space as well. And we get requests by venture capital companies and so on as well. But I should stress as well that most of our income these days is actually from advertising within our reports as well. So, but for example, I shouldn't name any names, but some like a very well-known WMS publisher that talks about WMS software wanted to participate in our reports, but were unfortunately not allowed because of their PR team. So yeah, we are very, very specialist, I would say.
And you do not take part in implementation or any further configuration of any systems. You just do the market research and allow the first step to get an overview and to find the right solution. Is that right?
Correct, yes. So we are not implementers. We stop at the publishing of our reports. As a part of publishing our reports, we sometimes get calls, let's say, from big names like perhaps Albertsons, Johnson & Johnson, IKEA, and so on as well. You know, they call us, they want to have a chat about these sectors, what's happening as well. These are people who do this kind of stuff every day, and they're quite excited about, you know, talk to someone to learn a bit what we see in the various different, you know, what's coming from Asia, for example, what's happening in North America, and so on as well. Some companies also contact us to see if there are, you know, for example, pallet shuttles was a big thing a while ago. So there was a few people who wanted to go to specific places in the US. They asked if we could kind of set them up with a visit as well to some of these locations. So we do get very specific kind of queries from end customers. Yeah. So even some end customers want us to look at various different trade shows across the world. So we travel quite a lot. For example, we get paid to look at what's happening at various different trade shows as well for some of the end customers. But then obviously, we also have for the vendors themselves as well. Yeah, so I hope that makes sense.
Absolutely. It's quite interesting to have that unpaid view into the niches and into the global scale of logistics. So you were talking about niches going very deep into things, but also inquiries from customers inside logistics, outside logistics, who try to find out about things with you as you are doing reports on that one. So are there any limits of the use of your reports or the markets you cover or discover with those with those reports and marketing reports?
So there are no restrictions on use. As long as the reports are intact, you can share them however you want. We welcome even customers or readers to share it on LinkedIn or social media and so on as well, as long as the reports are in their original format with the advertisers then included. That's the most important to us. And then you can use them internally as you wish. We see plenty of companies doing this internally, even end customers as well. So, for example, we wrote one report on online grocery, and then we spoke to a few people within a grocery company. They said that used part of our reports to present to the top management, to the board, really, of what their strategy should be moving forward. So we know our reports are being used in that way. When it comes to the spread of reports, we, as I said, yeah, we go into detail. We're a bit anal about kind of knowing these sectors very well, so we kind of track them continuously throughout the year, and then we do this period of interviews, and then we obviously publish. So it takes quite a while to, it probably takes us 3 months or so to put one of these reports together. I shouldn't say that that's every day 3 months, but it takes us that time to put the report together. And that obviously means that we have some limitations in the variety of reports that we do, but we are starting to take on new people as well to kind of spread out a bit more. So we're going a bit overlapping reports like shipping software controls we're doing as well, and digital twins and so on. So we're going outside of that intralogistic space, robotics as well. So yeah.
Okay, so I could imagine that when you do so much research and travel a lot and talk with experts, you really know what's hot and what is an innovation and what is not an innovation because you have seen it over the years. So let's a little bit different from the from a marketing department, I assume. So what, from your perspective at the moment, what are the hottest topics in the most active parts of logistics, tools, software, sets? Where happens the most from your perspective?
So that's you should have asked me last year. Perhaps there would have been more. There was far more R&D or new products coming out last year. So this year, for example, I just came back from CeMAT in Shanghai a few weeks ago, and there was really not that many new things on the market, which might be a kind of reflection of the market, how the market is behaving in itself. It's becoming more and more mature. We've seen loads and loads of R&D happening throughout the pandemic and even before that, yeah. So perhaps people are slowing down, consolidating some of their tech stacks and so on as well. So, I mean, there's always more in recent years, perhaps software and AI has become more of a topic, of course. But we haven't seen a super, a really good application for AI, especially within warehouses or with robotics. There's always AI being used, or computer vision. It depends on your definition of AI a bit as well. But robots always use, have always used more or less the last two decades, perhaps. Let's not overdo it. But they've used computer vision. So there's always AI inbuilt. But when you talk about proper business applications like SAP, for example, or a WMS using AI, there hasn't been that much work on that, to be honest. There haven't been any really good applications, partly because the sector is already quite advanced in the algorithms or the mathematics they're using, in the logic and so on as well. And partly as well, of course, AI is kind of giving up new, liability issues. Do you really want to have something that's not kind of linear to decide your output and such? And obviously, humanoids is quite big as well. It's quite sexy. But again, we've seen so much money in that space, and we were a bit disappointed to see at CeMAT in particular. We probably saw 10, 15 different vendors, but there's still nothing new. They're still moving the tote boxes, or, you know, and they're moving them from A to B. There's nothing like, some of them are still teleoperated. Yeah, that's fine. And so on, but there's nothing really sexy that's kind of showing the use of all this money that's gone in, that, you know, the next step, what's the next, you know, use case or application for that as well. So I shouldn't say I'm disappointed. It's good that the market is consolidating its R&D, I must say. But yeah, there's nothing really new that's popping up that's really,
It's very interesting to get your opinion about who manages robots. And you always compare what is invested to go this far, as I understood. So do you have any good results where you say, oh, if I think about how less they invested and what they came up with, that was a quite good result from the past, just as a comparison?
How do I know how much people have, they might have raised funds enormously, but then don't disclose it. So it's kind of, and then you would say that, oh, this company is doing really well on nothing, essentially, but still they have 100 million and so on behind them. So it's really difficult to...
Yeah. Perhaps to say it do you have anything that surprised you in the last years? Where you were excited to learn about it?
Sorry to say no.
Okay,
there are some new kind of trends we're seeing, but it's really difficult perhaps to dive into them, especially when we don't have really loads of time. So, for example, in online grocery, potentially we're seeing that there is demand for a new level of software, a new hierarchy of software to manage all like online, offline, and fast and quick and so on as well. So we see that coming. That's quite exciting for me as a part of this sector. Humanoids again. I mean, we track, for example, there's nearly 200 companies making humanoids in the world. Now, I don't think we're tracking all of them. There might be even 300. It's quite easy to say that you do a humanoid and then kind of just put a couple of robots together and make it look like a humanoid. If I have been pleasantly surprised, it's probably by potentially by companies that do wheel-based humanoids. Now, use cases are always important. When I talk to end customers, for example, a lot of end customers are engineers, and engineers are always excited about new tools. And we've talked to plenty of end customers who say that, you know, we reach out to these companies, they don't even respond to us, you know. So there seems to be kind of mismatch between people who want to try and the actual supply of these solutions as well. Now, there are some quite, say, interesting ways to do robots as well. So like Kinesi, for example, is one robot company from the ex-founder of Bear Robotics. So he's using kind of Bear Robotics base, which is fairly, I would say, bootstrapped, perhaps, which is a good way to go into the humanoid space, perhaps. But there are plenty of other companies that do that as well, too.
So you also mentioned AI as a buzzword in the field of logistics, and probably far more than the logistics niche, but also something with maybe big potential. But you also mentioned if you're talking about humanoids or different things, there is also some kind of algorithm, some kind of artificial intelligence in it. So looking at it today, from your point of view, what's the importance of AI today, and from your perspective, what might be the importance of AI in, I don't know, five years? Is there something you can see as a trend, or is there a different view on it?
So, I mean, AI is a big big topic in its own right. Yeah. So, for example, we're seeing some early moves into opening up some more potential in the sector. So we've spoken to one company in particular that offers you a way to, so a fleet manager that manages many different mobile robots, for example, let's say 100 different robots. So this company, they offer you the opportunity to interact with that software with natural language. So we tried that when I did an interview with them, and then I asked them, why don't you ask the software to optimize the solution by 10%? So that was a very tricky kind of question to put, because it's very difficult to optimize something that's already optimized. Yeah. So. But we can see some openings for the use of AI, I think. Right now, AI is probably mainly used as a kind of inquiry tool to sit on top for. It's used for training as well, training purposes. So all these, for example, WMS sector, there's so much documentation for each of these software packages. So there is now quite a lot of the companies are using LLMs or AI to inquire, to let users kind of ask in natural language instead of having very specific queries. That's a good use of it, I think. But when it comes to actual end users, there's still kind of the proof in the pudding. Yeah? So it might come, it might not. There's vibe coding, for example. We hear more and more people using vibe coding in the space. If that affects the stuff I write about, not sure, but there's definitely people using it. But when it comes to humanoids, I think it's very, very interesting as well how the developments, you know, there's been so much, far more money put into AI and LLMs and natural language recognition than there has been in hardware. So what we talked about in our last humanoid report that we put out in January 2025, for example, is that there is starting to be a mismatch between the hardware and the software. So the humanoid itself might start understanding everything that you talk about, but perhaps at some point it will be unable to execute on the on what you want it to do. Yeah. So, for example, if you tell it, you know, you need to clean that shelf really far up, but perhaps even as simple as the it can't reach there or something, you know, or perhaps it doesn't simply understand the physics of the request that you talk about. So we see that kind of happening as well, and that the hardware might have to kind of come up to the standard of the software as well.
It's quite interesting to listen to what you said, because while you were talking, I wanted to place the question. When you were talking about AI is used to optimize things, but especially in logistics, there are already several things optimized, and they can't be optimized in the same way. There is money thrown on. So I wanted to ask the question, if you can see some kinds of disruptive techniques on that one. I mean, AI can be used to optimize things, but I mean, in the end, there is an end of optimization. The big idea, from my point of view, behind AI is to create something new, something that is on the next level. But when I understand your answer the right way, there is no such thing on the horizon to come up which might be some kind of overall optimizing or disruptive or whatever best word we want to use for it.
I think my idea is slightly hypothetical as well. You know, the idea that you can optimize, as you say, what's already optimized, you know, when people build warehouses and so on as well, they tend to optimize them from the start. But you always, especially bigger deployments, I think there is still, you know, not saying that engineers might not think about all the different variations, but I still think there might be some ways for AI to be able to pull out those kind of perhaps last 2-3%, which if you have a really big warehouse, like a super big environment, that will be super helpful for you to kind of be able to squeeze those efficiencies out. If you're only kind of talking about WMS for someone who's doing perhaps 1,000 orders per day, I don't think it's really helpful, to be honest. And it would be really difficult to get all the data points to be able to optimize as well. But really big organizations, I think that's definitely doable. But you know, data in, or what they say, crap data in, crap data out. Yeah. So you need to be, again, we talk about this in our future warehouse automation report, that you really need to start thinking about the data that you collect. So first of all, you don't just collect, you know, dust that has no kind of relevancy in the future, but that you also start collecting the important data. Does that mean that you need to have new sensors? Does it mean that you need to have different kinds of sensors? So yeah, I think that's potentially where we are right now, that we need to have the data as well. But the decisions you take today might mean that your AI strategy for the future might not be possible to optimize as well. Yeah. So for example, one interesting fact we see right now is AI being used, or computer vision being used, on sortation bands, for example, to see like density and to measure density and throughput on the bands, for example. That's quite an interesting development as well. And I think, yeah, for that, you have to have very specific sensors and so on as well, very specific to that particular application as well.
So it's more to build up the systems to fit to AI use than to just throw AI on everything and say, let's optimize and get it out. Okay. So it's very interesting to talk with you, with your broad view. As a result of everything you experience when doing the research, we thought it would be cool to talk about the different regions of the globe where are they at the moment and where are they moving? Do we have some thoughts about that? Where is Europe? Where is Asia? Where is the US?
So, yeah, they're quite disparate. You know, China is obviously, I'm not sure, talking about Asia, you have to kind of pull out China from there. China's just kind of like a rocket ship going 3,000 miles an hour, you know, just on its own. And then you look at the regions outside of that. In Asia, for example, if you start over there, Japan has a really good reputation for being quite an advanced kind of economy when it comes to robotics and so on as well. They are potentially, but when it comes to more legacy type robots, so industrial robot arms and so on as well. But when it comes to any other form of robots, like warehouse robots and so on as well, it's a very different story. Salaries are quite low in Japan for that type of work. Kind of starting salaries are very low. So ROI is very, very difficult in the space, even though the government have now kind of started kind of changing tax, and they're now starting to invest in different types of robots and so on as well. And we also see loads of startups as well kind of forming in that country. Korea as well is quite an advanced economy in the space. They have advanced quite a lot, I'll say, e-commerce and also in industrial as well. They have a big automotive manufacturing part as well. When you talk about Southeast Asia, there's really not a lot to talk about. There is still quite a lot of, for example, if you look at the WMS, there's still quite a lot of stuff that's homemade, even though that the market is developing quite fast. And then obviously you have Australia as well, which is like the larger part of APAC or whatever you want to call it, which is a more of an advanced economy with quite high salaries and ROI is quite favorable. So quite a lot of vendors see that as a very positive market. India is kind of moving forwards and quite interesting as well. We hear a lot of companies wanting to set up there because they think it's kind of like the next economy to benefit potentially from the US-China decoupling that's going on as well. And then we look at the Middle East, there's loads of money in that space. Questionable how much they actually need of everything that they do. We've heard about some huge deployments that perhaps were like 10, 20 years ROI, but they're really fancy, they're really big kind of warehouses. And it's a growing space as well. Lots of interest there. They want to change their economies, obviously, away from oil dependency. Europe right now is potentially suffering. The automotive industry, especially, so right now I'm writing a report on AGV and AMR. The automotive sector, as you know, being Germans, yeah, the sector in Germany is kind of suffering hardcore. We've seen that in several places, but we're seeing quite a lot of positive investments in Eastern Europe, for example. Northern Europe is still continuing quite well, but yeah, Central Europe, if we can call it that, Western Europe, Central of Western Europe, perhaps is still suffering a bit. You know, the UK is doing so-so. It's never really been a robot company per se, but apparently it's a good economy. The US was really good up to perhaps the end of last year, and then tariffs came, which had kind of brought in loads of uncertainty, I think, for a lot of companies. Some companies are less affected, some companies are more affected by that, but I think we've seen that there is a lot of hesitation because people simply don't know. But that has kind of, it's 6 months ago or something like that right now, so it's kind of calming down. Some people are returning to the table and taking decisions on projects and so on. So that's pretty much it. South America is quite an interesting perhaps market as well. We see loads of Chinese companies kind of trying to enter there quite quickly or aggressively, I would say, actually. They're trying to get into that market, and we see quite a lot. Actually, we see loads of downloads from the South American market. And then obviously we have Russia. Russia, you know, a war kind of is... it's a boost to automation, using automation, kind of, yeah. So we've seen that in Ukraine as well. There are some companies that sell into these countries as well that are typically unwilling to talk about it. So, for example, in China, there's loads of people supplying to Russia and so on as well. Some even have Russian on their, or Cyrillic, or whatever it's called now, yeah, on their business cards, for example. So we see those two, that happening as well. Last year, when I went to Shanghai, there was far more Russian people visiting. This year, there were more people from South America, Europe, and North America as well. So
you missed out Africa. Is there something special about it, or there's just no place for getting up with technique?
I mean, it's interesting that you mention it. Yeah, so it's very. I would say when people say EMEA, they typically stop at the Middle East. South Africa, there are quite a few projects in, so which is doing all right, I guess. It's neither here nor there. We don't really know much about the South African market per se. It's kind of happening when it's happening, I think, yeah. But the rest of Africa, I think perhaps if there is a project, it's quite disparate. South America is probably more, it's nice to say, advanced perhaps when it comes to kind of use of warehouse automation and robotics. You know, you have to have a kind of like an ecosystem around it as well. You have to have power that's reliable. You have to have the maintenance staff and everything like that as well, people training and so on to use robots. Yeah, so, and that's perhaps not feasible everywhere in Africa right now. Potentially that there are some like North Africa, Egypt, Morocco, and other places as well that are favorable, but we rarely hear about the people going there. So
I was just asking because if you're looking on reports about Africa, the Chinese companies are quite interested in getting into the African country, like harbors or also big logistics hubs. But if you compare it to the size of, let's say, Chinese hubs or something like that, so it's quite small. I was just wondering because you especially mentioned Chinese companies in South America. So I just wanted to ask where it's the same in Africa, knowing that from a logistics point of view, Africa is, how to say it diplomatically, it's not the edge where the world is turning around. So asking.
Yeah, I think you'll see this kind of investment into ports and so on as well, starting to build to kind of push a development of bigger warehouses and so on as well, once the those ports are readily built. But then it takes quite a while before they start using kind of automation and so on as well in their own factories, etc. So I think we're still, you know, it's a bit like some people say that US is a bit behind in terms of automation, that Europe is far more advanced. It seems like the US market is kind of coming back or taking that up. So the market has been really thriving, the most of the sectors that we write about in the past few years. Yeah, so it's been really, really good. And unfortunately, it's been slightly disrupted by recent events. But it's no doubt that they will come back. But when is perhaps the question, yes.
So when we first talked, you were in Asia. You mentioned it before. You have been to Shanghai, to Duth, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about different countries where you travel often to do research for your reports. Things like that. So what do you enjoy most visiting countries like China, like Japan, like South Korea, like whatever you're visiting? And knowing you're living in the UK nowadays, what is something which makes you excited to return to the UK?
Excited to return to the UK and the lovely weather here. I don't think so, but no. But the UK has its very advantages in terms of you know, when we call people around the world to find out to interview them for our reports, it's always very easy. In the morning in the UK, you can talk to Asia quite easily. During the day, obviously, Europe, and then in the evening, you can talk to the US quite easily, and then you can go to bed and sleep as usual. So I live in Korea, for example, for 2 months. When you're there, it's so difficult to kind of have that kind of daily rhythm. You have to kind of get up at 3 o'clock in the middle of the night to call kind of West Coast or someone else, and you know the syncing of time zones is just horrible there actually. So I can see why some companies don't want to go to various places in the world, because it simply means that they have to stay awake 24 hours. But on the other hand, you know, we go to trade shows and events from Japan, Korea, Thailand, China to, you know, and I hope we go to India at some point soon as well, but North America as well, possibly even South America. They all have their kind of little charms, you know. And in Japan, you can see some really interesting new companies, but Japanese companies tend to be perhaps a bit insular. They think that the Japanese market is the biggest, so those companies are rarely kind of out on the big market. So that's quite interesting to see those companies there yourself, you know, some really new ideas and so on. When you go to China, it's all, you know, yeah, you just have to sharpen your elbows so you can walk through the masses of people that go to those shows. It's just amazing how many people, and everyone is shouting over everyone. So it's that's kind of really interesting. And China now as well kind of seems to have, they were always, I shouldn't say that we're always copying, but yeah, well, perhaps they were. But now they seem to have increasingly starting to lead the innovation in some of these niches that we cover as well. So there's actually innovations in their own rights coming out. And that's partly because the market there is like super competitive. It's really hard to make money. And that's also why those companies are really, really keen to go abroad as well. And you notice that directly when you visit there as well. When we go down to Southeast Asia, it's just very warm and so on. It's very nice to go there to see it, but yeah, it's a bit less excitement perhaps. There is not kind of like the startups that you see in Japan, potentially even Korea and China. And then you go to the US and you see loads of this kind of, it's really exciting companies there as well. They have quite easy access to VC funding, for example. So even perhaps you don't have the best idea, but the best idea don't always win out. It might be that you just have the best execution on that idea as well. And you see that quite easily in the US, that's kind of like how the funding works there. You know, people get money quite, I shouldn't say it's easy to get money there, but you know, it's not as having a European company and you have to have 1 million turnover or revenue even before you have a pilot with your product, or even before you have a product kind of, yeah, to raise money. So those are kind of like the difference. Yeah, in the US there's quite a lot of exciting companies as well coming out there, despite lots of hardware coming out from China as well. So there's more focus on software. So actually one exciting thing you might be interested in is at CMAT, which is very similar to Logimat and Modex, Promat, for example. But I could only count a single pure play software company that exhibited at that show. And that kind of is super amazing to me, that they have so perhaps different view on software.
Okay, thank you very much, Tom. So I think today we learned a lot about the global view, about what's happening in the logistics innovation sectors, or in the fields where we have a lot of development. I want especially thank you for trying to stay neutral. And now we are approaching our last question. And so far in over 300 recordings, we had no one who said, no, I don't have to tell you anything, but you did when we talked about in the preparation. And you just wanted to make sure that you do not have a special recommendation because you're neutral when you do your research. So we understood that. But we do not leave it out. We just ask you the question anyway. So do you have an impulse, an idea for our audience regarding a book, a video, an event, a person, something you want to share from your personal feeling that gave you some positive impulses? Just this neutral.
Sorry, I'm going to be really, really boring and tell you that potentially my partner in business, Yasser Al-Refai, I think, so we have very, very different views on the world. And I would say that his world is more engineering, whereas mine is more perhaps markets. And I think I really appreciate his way of looking at the world from a more technical perspective. I mean, he's designed like micro processors and so on as well in his past. Whereas I have been primarily looking at, you know, numbers and, you know, decks from investors and so on as well. So I think that's what gives me really, it excites me to have him with me on my in the business, to be honest. Yeah, because we kind of, he covers the vertical and I cover the horizontal, or the other way around. Anyway, it's kind of very, very interesting, I think. So it's kind of, it's led us places, I think. Yeah, so I think. Yeah, that's the person I would recommend. It's a bit blasé, but yeah, no, he is great. Yeah, so
cool, very nice. I mean, in the end, it's very interesting and very valuable to find a match for yourself in person to work on a product as you do, which suits the market and finds a market for itself. So it's quite inspiring to listen to what you just said. And of course we put you both into our show notes, so people, our audience, can follow you on wherever, LinkedIn or whatever, and try to get something of what you just mentioned from the in between of your person. So also from my side, thank you very much for being here, for sharing your insights on the market of data research, of market research. Very interesting, as for me personally, as someone who's absolutely into mathematics, statistics, and something like that. It was very interesting to follow you through what you just told us. And yeah, I'm very happy you stayed with us. So to everyone listening, we put Tom into our show notes. We put Stick Limited, of course, into our show notes. If you need any kind of that report, just ask him whether he's able to do it with his company. And I would end today's episode with a warm thank you very much. Hope to see you soon somewhere in the world. And everyone to recommend reading your reports on your website. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Tobias and Andreas. Thanks for having me.
Thank you to our audience for listening to us. If you have any questions, just ask them below on the LinkedIn post or on our blog, and we try to answer them. So thank you very much for staying with us. We will listen to each other on the next episode, probably then again in German. Until then, thank you very much. Have a nice day and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.